to go in like 10 seconds. Are shining on me like a rhinestone cowboy. All right. Everybody, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. This is issue 143. This issue is the second in a story arc that Cole brilliantly came up with, which we started to talk about how it was misinterpreted, because I referred to it as the toys arc, and Cole took that as me wanting to do an arc on toys, which I'm going to tell you now is going to happen. Okay,
oh, we love some toys. Well, yeah, sure.
Cole's initial reaction is, well, of course, why not? We can do that. And I'm like, no. You had a brilliant idea for an arc on. Yeah.
It's like, here's one of the titles during the arc. I'm like, oh wait, so get ahead of yourself.
So what's the name of this arc, of this story arc?
This is Where Does He Get Those Wonderful Toys? That was just downright dreadful, but
yeah, it was good. You've only done it 30 times today, so
yeah, that's so true.
So you're forgiven. But this issue is called Suit Up. If you've listened to the last issue, which the last issue, if you haven't listened to it, was all handheld gadgetry and technology, and what it means, and you know how powerful it can be, and how powerful it isn't, and a long diatribe on Pastebot Pete, which we both stand behind. All right, I'm not backing down on that. I'm standing firm on Pastebot Pete. But this issue is all about the suit, the encompassing wrap yourself in suit. So Cole,
the thing about it is, you know, does the suit make the man? In some cases, it does.
Yes, indeed it does. In the case of a great many Fantastic Four and Spider-Man villains, it certainly does. So where do you want to take this? Where do you want to go?
I think, you know, we were casting about with some various possibilities. There were some things I had in mind going in, certain characters I wanted to talk about, because there are a lot of characters that utilize suits. And, of course, you know, I'm sure when you see the title, your first instinct is perhaps, you know, Iron Man or somebody like that with a suit of armor. But we're actually saving Iron Man for a little later in the arc. I think we're going to go with our next chapter in this arc,
okay,
which is military grade.
Okay.
So there are some distinctions that had to be drawn. And at what point does your suit cross that line into the military grade? And I think certainly Iron Man is a case where that's happening.
Right. And there's so many of these that could cross into that category, so we've got to kind of be careful with that right now.
Exactly. So where do you go from there? And without even really having the foresight to have conjured this up, some of the imagery we're kicking around and just the discussions leading up to this issue brought to mind an important aspect of the technology in the suit that goes beyond like a suit where, you know, aspects of it give you a power.
Right.
And that is the unstable molecule.
Right.
Which, you know, Stan Lee had this brilliant sort of poor man's Michael Okuda Star Trek The Next Generation approach to things, where he could just sort of will a term into existence. And that took care of everything. You know, mutants just got him off the hook from coming up with ridiculous origin stories.
Right.
And a little something that was spawned in the pages of the Fantastic Four basically makes the Marvel Universe possible. And that, of course, is the unstable molecule.
But, like, can you imagine sitting in the bullpen with, you know, during the 60s when all of this was happening, and, you know, somebody, whoever it might be, asks the question, you know, well, why doesn't you know, why doesn't Johnny Storm's costume catch on fire every time every time he flames on? Or why doesn't Reed Richards' costume rip every time he stretches? You know, we're drawing this way. You know, why? And he's just sitting there doing whatever he's doing, and he's just like, unstable molecules! And everybody's like, yep, okay, Stan said it, let's go. You know, anything, mutants!
You can almost imagine that, you know, someone wrote into the Fantastic Four, you know, here's a favorite from our letters page where someone challenged me and Jack on why Johnny Storm's costume isn't burned off his body, leaving him completely naked. Apart from the Comics Code Authority, who would have something to say about that?
But anything.
The answer is quite simple. Reed Richards invented unstable molecules.
But anything can be used, like anything he's ever done. Gamma radiation, like,
yeah,
okay,
exactly.
We need a vehicle for why the Hulk turns into the Hulk. Like, gamma radiation! Oh, okay, fine, whatever he said.
How did the Fantastic Four... Cosmic ray! It only worked twice, ever!
Ever! Ever! But yes, unstable molecules, they've later been used in, like, a whole bunch of characters. Everybody from, you know, originating with the Fantastic Four, on down to, you know, certain iterations of X-Men and Spider-Man and the Power Pack, which is a comic.
Oh, wow.
Which we still need to do a show on kid groups. We still haven't done that, but Power Pack... Daredevil at one point had used them, so it really became a way to explain, and I think in a weird way, an elegant way to explain how you can have a costume that can do all of the things that a costume needs to do and remain on a person of superpower, you know. I think
exactly, because it allowed for the unusual mix of a costume that appears identical to be able to be set ablaze from within.
Right.
And survive, and also let the fire on through. Or to actually be as malleable as it's the person wearing it.
Right.
So, you know, when you stretch, the last thing in the world you need is to have to, you know, force your body against the give.
I guess it's been called a smart material, and it mimics whatever the wearer's abilities are. So,
and it's as awkward as it is. It's as awkwardly named as it is elegantly named.
Right? It's perfect. It might be the perfect comic book contrivance. Unstable molecules.
It sounds dangerous. I mean, that's how nuclear bombs are made, right?
It sounds like everything. You know what I mean? Yeah. It just sounds like it could be anything, and it is.
I mean, basically, easiest analysis of that terminology, two words, ultimate nullifier.
We
can refer back to the previous issue.
Right.
If you need some help with that one.
Exactly. But it does the opposite of what the ultimate nullifier does. In the sense that
we're still unclear what the ultimate nullifier does.
The ultimate nullifier was basically the written to get you out of being painted into a corner. That's what it does, you know. That's it. This became it might have been created to get them out of a painted corner, which is, you know, how do they stay clothed when they're one's a giant rock guy and one can turn, how does the costume turn invisible with Sue Storm? You know, you might have painted yourself into a corner with that, but it was used much the same way that mutants turned out to be. So many of Stan Lee's comic book contrivances and Jack Kirby's comic book contrivances were kind of like seat of the pants thinking that became so much more than the original idea.
I think everyone captured the imagination to the point where you're on board with them 100%.
Right. And because mutants became, you know, not to get too far off topic, but the whole racial struggle, you know, the idea that you can use it to tackle social issues, when I'm sure it never was intended. The word mutant was never totally intended to be that. You know, it was a way to explain how to like you said, how to give people powers without having to write some kind of extraneous backstory. Unstable Molecules, I think, did the same thing. So kudos on that.
Yes, that was just an easy out that was at once brilliant, just sheer brilliance.
And I think a lot to speak to the idea of not wanting to write, you know, extraneous backstories. I think a lot of the characters that we're going to be talking about today, or at least a lot of the ideas that we're going to be talking about today, came from that idea that how did this guy become a supervillain, a one-off supervillain, or you know, how did that happen? Oh, found a suit of armor, you know.
Yeah,
that's pretty much it. He found a suit of armor. So many of the Iron Man, Fantastic Four, Spider-Man villains during that period of time came from that idea that they either, you know, that Justin Hammer gave him a suit of armor to go fight Iron Man, or they found a suit of armor, you know, in a dumpster behind Stark Industries, or you know, they,
yeah, there many were the suits of armor to be had.
Right, where did those come from? Regulations.
I think wasn't there a period where there was a miniseries called Civil War? No, Secret War. Not Secret Wars, mind you.
Yes.
There was a Secret War series. If I'm not mistaken, part of that was about the origin of a lot of this, you know.
No, it absolutely was.
You know, the suits of armor and such. This tech being available to supervillains like, you know, like panties in a Japanese vending machine.
It comes around every like 10 or 15 years, because you always have like the Secret War, Armor Wars was one where somebody stole all of his blueprints to all of his armor and started making them, and it turned out to be Justin Hammer, of course, because why that is at the first place you look is beyond me.
Should be knocking on his door, you know, it's like the usual suspects, but there's just like one person in the lineup.
Right, it's just Justin Hammer over and over again.
Just standing there like Kaiser Sose. Oh, spoiler alert.
So do any of these armors, these people that you're thinking of when you think about this, do they speak to any of the iconography we were talking about last time with like Captain America's shield or the Batarang or the Ninja Turtles? Like, does any of that?
I think one of them that's kind of a standout is Scorpion, the old
Spider
villain. Because not only does he have a suit of armor that could have, because it has a power beam, a force beam, some sort of lasers or whatever, there's some sort of energy discharge that could come from anywhere.
Right.
But to go to the trouble of having some sort of ass-powered prehensile prosthetic.
Ass-powered.
I mean,
guys,
you have
tone.
To imagine you actually have to kind of, you know,
control it when you're flexing and
cheeks just the right way to activate the motors. Like with this Dremel thing, you know, the things you put on your Dremels. You can
Oh gosh, that guy has the best ass in the Marvel Universe after that work.
And he has got like some serious glutes. He's been working that ass master there. And so, you know, you definitely have a character who, by virtue of being slavish to having a kick-ass name, is sort of obliged, if you will, to having some sort of very iconic suit of armor.
Right, and the one that comes to my mind for if we're not talking about Iron Man, which, you know, that we're saving that. So there's a lot of things that fall, like the Red Guardian and stuff like that, falls under the Red Rocket, falls under the purview of Iron Man. You know, that's military tech. But if there's one that really stands out in my mind as an iconic armor, it's Doctor Doom. And I think I can consider Doctor Doom to be in this category because his
Absolutely.
Armor is not a military. It's you know, his regalia, if you will.
Yeah, it is his personal tech. It's basically a standard Latverian mid-period, you know, during the early Latverian conquest, during the feudal period, if you will.
Right.
Traditional armor of his people. you know, during the War of the Roses.
Is that what happened? There was a Latverian War of the Roses?
Latverian War of the Roses.
Okay.
But, you know, it's invoking a kind of a classical look with a stylish jerkin and cape and cowl added to the mix. It's not common to wear accoutrements over your armor like that, except maybe on the parade grounds. So it's a very stylish look, but it's replete with things like force field generators and force blast. You know, take a few notes here. You can fire force blast from your gauntlets, not from your ass tail.
I don't think anything's going to be better than ass tail, though. And matter of fact, I think that they misnamed the character. I think if they go back in...
Well, actually, there is an ass tail.
Is there?
He's a villain in Muggerville. Yeah,
thank you. Thank you for bringing Muggerville back around to the ass tail.
It was an enemy of Cowhand, who was the Iron Fist style character that has one hand that... a hoof.
I was reminded, well, last issue, and I didn't bring it up, of One Face.
Yes.
Because we were talking about Two Face's coin being a weapon of sorts in his hands, whereas One Face has a double-headed coin. So yeah. it's always flipping heads. So yeah. So it never lands on the kill him side.
Incisive.
Right, it never leans on the kill him side.
Full of the desire, but it just never has the catalyst there to push him over the edge.
Right.
Another interesting armored character, if you will, or suiting up, and perhaps borders on the military grade, but again, it's sort of strictly personal type of thing. It's not like it gets a lot of mileage anywhere else, but... oddly enough, Annihilus.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Well,
you
that
know,
falls straight.
He already had
yeah.
the giant green bat wings, but to get a fuchsia suit of armor...
Right.
You know, in fuchsia and avocado is...
I was going to say the green and the bright purple-pink really pops. That you've got to be able to see it from space. That's the thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but, you know...
That's
one of those cases where, you know, it's a very stylized armor that may or may not contribute to the powers, because there's that little weird capsule that he wears on his neck that I think is the source of all the power.
But, you know,
from it's like this elephant suppository thing that he's got there.
From where I'm sitting, though, like there's bad villain armor. There's also the monarchial regalia, which is, I think, is what Doom and Annihilus definitely and characters like the Monarch from DC.
Yes, where you're suiting up in such a way to have a kind of a screen presence, if you will.
Right, you're making yourself larger than life. There's one, though, that while it might border on military, for me, really strikes me as pretty awesome, and he's no stranger to this show, and that would be Rom the Space Knight.
Ah.
Yeah, whose armor really serves much of a purpose outside of surviving the vacuum of space. But still, awesome, nonetheless.
Oh, yes.
Super cool, and I'm really hoping that he gets his own at some point.
Well, another interesting use of kind of suiting up in the Scorpion school of things is the Beetle.
The Beetle was pretty awesome.
Yeah, because the Beetle, you know, went with a kind of ornithopterous effect to... take flight. There are certainly many, many ways, from the repulsor ray to anti-gravity generators and to any other means of powered flight at your disposal for individuals, jetpacks, if you will.
Right.
To go with a pair of plastisteel rapid vibrating wing implements.
Is that really how he flew, though? Do we know that? Like, or is that just kind of the Cthulhu wing effect? You know what I mean?
Could be. I'm not certain. I always took it to be that was the actual effect there.
Okay.
Which seems like, you know, the prototypical versions probably slammed you into the wall. I mean, hence the armor. The armor was actually secondary. Trying to work out the flying beetle backpack, he probably broke his face a few times. Decided perhaps, you know, suiting up would be a good idea on top of that.
Valid. Very true.
You know, you thought, which it does bring to mind another really classic, fun suit-based character, if you will, was the Rocketeer.
I loved the Rocketeer. That, yes, yes.
You have the idea built in of, you know, even the helmet is part of the overall concept of the locomotion acting as a rudder. Granted, it would snap all of the vertebrae in your neck every time you turned your head, which would be once.
Your head would literally snap off. It would just...
Yeah, and then your corpse would just be sailing off until the fuel ran out or some obstacle of significant substance was in your way. Nonetheless, there you have it.
And another one of the, you know, the regalia class armor, I think... You know, we've got Doom. The High Evolutionary is another one.
Oh yeah,
that I didn't think really needed the armor. Like Doom has a real set of power armor that shoots. Not only, you know, it's technology mixed with mysticism in a weird kind of, you know, only Doom could pull it off kind of way. But the High Evolutionary, I thought, was more mutant and didn't necessarily need the armor, but still would. Still would strap it on.
I think he wanted to invoke that kind of power and that look and that feel.
I think so.
Some of these guys are just, you know, little fashionistas.
Well, yeah, you're going for the Hugo Boss Nazi thing at some point.
That's right. You want to get like that weird version of Dune that never got completed.
What about my favorite? And I was going to save him for later, but I'm gonna bring him out now because he's my absolute favorite set of armor in any comic books, and that would be Stiltman.
Oh, of course, yes, Stiltman.
Kind of the most useless set of armor that I can possibly imagine.
I mean, if you're doing some sort of like really wanting to piss people off, if you're into geocaching, you want to put the little thing like up on the top of a light pole or something.
Oh, that's great. That's great. You have an insidious mind. You really do.
These are the things I would do with these. I do stupid things with these superpowers.
Just that's awful. That's like the worst idea I could possibly.
My God, it's around here somewhere. I'm getting the hell of a signal.
That's just
meanwhile, 27 feet up. Beep, beep.
But there's lesser suits of armor in that regard that I don't think we consider. You know, one of the lesser suits of armor that comes to mind immediately, because I love the, you know, I love the old West Coast Avengers.
Yes.
You know, that class of character where they aren't Iron Man. And I think my favorite in that school is Stingray.
Damn it, I was going to bring up
Stingray. Oh, I stole your thunder, I'm sorry. Stingray.
Yes.
Anybody who has, like, the Black Manta. Did I steal another one? Was Black Manta another one of yours?
Actually, you know, I hadn't really considered Black Manta, but that's a good point. Because, you know, you have to have a suit that can withstand, you know, Aquaman levels of atmospheres under the sea.
Right, so you know, those are areas that we don't really consider, but those are totally suits of armor. You know, and the Stingray, I believe, had little, didn't he have little, because he had the wings. He had little underwater wings.
So he could, like, somehow manage to swim with these awkward water wings.
Didn't he have little jets, little propulsion boots or something?
And then he also had, like, you know, some sort of stinging electro zap effect as well.
Right.
And then, you know, speaking of Rom the Space Knight, there's a character that I believe got his start in the pages of Rom. And I want to say, was it Torpedo? Who would later go on to, I think, be like a Defender or a member of the West Coast Avengers or
something
like that.
Everybody was a Defender at some point.
But he had these, yeah, it was Torpedo. And he had these little gauntlets around his, like, calves and his upper arms. And a Rocketeer style, this very fashionable little winged tiara thing going on.
Right, it was like circled in, like somebody actually did the research for the, you know, aquadynamics of how you would need a helmet to fit in order to cut through the water more effectively, and this is what they came up with.
Actually, Torpedo was like airborne.
Oh, was he? Okay.
Yeah, it's made it, again, sort of Rocketeer-esque.
Yeah.
You know, the Torpedo armor, if you will, was, and it, what's really cool is like the leggings had the like the Aquaman fin behind, like right at the back of the calf, I guess, for further ruddering.
We don't give water-based heroes and villains enough credit.
Yeah, Torpedo should have been, they should have let him like try to be in the water as well.
Yeah,
and I think later there was a female
Torpedo.
Torpedo.
Torpedus.
Took over the mantle of Torpedo. But that was an interesting one, because it was just like these little fans.
there's a class here.
You're flying.
There's a really cool class of armored tech heroes that I know that you and I love to talk about, and it's timely for when this episode's going to be released, so I would like to talk about those a little bit. And that would be the shrinking, growing class.
Exactly. Which utilizes something akin to, if not specifically, the unstable molecule.
Well, it's PIM particles. On the Marvel side, it's PIM particles.
Right. PIM particles.
So old Hank Pym, when he wasn't beating his wife and then it was written out of the Marvel Universe, was creating these PIM particles, and the PIM particles allowed him to shrink to microscopic size, or apparently grow to, I believe it was 20 feet was his ceiling, before his body gave out.
Yeah, because at a certain height, the rheumatiz would set in.
Right.
You get a little stove up.
But I think the thing that I love about these characters is they aren't the Doctor Dooms. They aren't the, they aren't even the Captain Americas. They aren't the warrior class of comic books. They're the intrepid. They're either the scientist or the intrepid adventurer class.
Yes,
which I think is really cool.
Well, yeah, they're almost like the adventurer scientists of a bygone era. They're like these, you know, like Charles Darwin hitching a ride on the Beagle so he could drive all over the world and look at animals and work. You know, there was a time when you had these sort of, we've talked about before, the gentleman scientist.
Right.
And you'd literally just go out and, like Kane Kung Fu, only with a PhD.
Right. You'd hook up with the Smithsonian or something and...
Yeah, you'd go to the... British Explorers Club in The Hague, and or in the Mall, as they say on the Monty Python, and you'd go check all this stuff out, and
but I think those are
in a way that they were invoking, I think, perhaps even without their creators consciously realizing, precisely that sort of scientist who, you know, is advancing science, but at the same time going out and getting their hands dirty, and
right,
in ways you just don't see. You know, it's like Grant's like me; you'll never get him out of Nevada.
And I think the other really cool thing that they do with that, then, right, is you have stuff like what was, why can't I think of his name? Palmer. The Atom, Ray Palmer.
Oh yeah, Ray Palmer.
You have like Ray Palmer's, his lab is shrunk down. You know, in every, you know, I love the shrunk down lab that you have to look through a microscope to see what he's doing. Like, that is just, it is such a cool, like, there's so many cool things you can do with this stuff. There's so many cool things you can do with armor, and with, you know, when you let your imagination, when you take it to, you know, beyond the event horizon, you know, and let it go, like the contrivance that Safari suit Hank Pym can carry everything that he'd ever need shrunk down in his pockets. And,
yes.
And pull them out. Essentially, hearkening back to the last episode, I didn't want to bring it up then because it didn't really fit, but he literally has every piece of tech he would ever need in the palm of his hand. You know,
exactly.
From flying cars to, you know, giant rocket launchers to submarines to whatever it might be, because he just shrinks them down and throws them in his pocket.
Again, much like Batman with his utility belt in the last issue, as long as you remember to bring it with you.
Yeah.
Right. So he had that red jumpsuit just chock-a-block with pockets that he was just shoved full of stuff, and that's a really,
and you can just
cool
see him, like, you know, rooting around in there, and like automobiles and ninja weapons and stuff are just falling everywhere. Mm-hmm. But they're tiny, you know?
Right.
You gotta gas them up before you can.
You gotta get them there and gas them up with your little gas gun.
That's right.
So who does it best? Who does it best, Cole?
Well, you know, you talked about in the last issue the iconic shield of Captain America.
Right.
But up to a certain period where we were jettisoning the kind of fun aspects of comics and replacing them with hard seam lines and...
Right.
Making them look closer to movie costumes. I always thought that there was an iconography to Captain America's armor as well.
I
agree.
Because,
you know, while he is a super soldier, he is a smart super soldier who wears this wonderful little scale armor. I always loved that scaly look to Captain America's costume because it spoke of something. It invoked an armor. In a way,
I agree.
And with the opposite of the spectrum, the spider armor.
Oh God, yeah.
Any given version, from the leggy one that Tony Stark built, to, if you go back several years, to the quilted spider armor, the quilt mail, if you will.
Right.
With the shield, if I'm not mistaken. I believe there was a web-looky shield.
I think so.
Involved.
I think so. I think so.
And I want to just insert here, in an awkward point, a brief addendum to the last issue held. How this got past us.
Oh, no.
After we have waxed poetic about Daredevil for so damn long. Gladiators, buzzsaw, gaunts.
Yes.
How that escapes us, I do not know.
Though that sort of fits more into this episode than the last one, because it wasn't like he was holding them. They were, you know...
Oh, that's true.
They were mounted.
They were kind of part of the suit. So
right.
I guess, yeah, so it's easy to get lost in the armor aspect and forget the suit aspect. Because this is really about, you know, putting on a suit to become the thing you are.
Right. Which and here's the thing you were saying earlier, and this brings me to my favorite, I think probably my favorite, and that is what you know, when is it more suit than man? You know, when does it become more suit than man? And it's easy to say, okay, Cyborg is more suit than man. It's easy to say, you know, in a lot of ways, Batman is more tech than hero. And, you know, I think that there are arguments to be made on either side of that coin. But for me, the classic definition of more suit than man until you figure out who the man is Booster Gold.
Ah, very nice.
Yeah, because...
Well played, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. Because, you know, Booster didn't even know who he was. Until you know, he hooked up with Blue Beetle and the Justice League International and ran around with them for a while. You know, essentially he was a con man from the future that stole a super suit from a museum. That's what he was.
Yes.
And then he went back in time with this Biff Tannen like knowledge of what was going to happen and managed to fight crime with that idea. And, you know, that to me is... It's a great evolution, because he starts as, you know, the character's really cool. He starts as more suit than man. You know, he's fighting crime with the suit that he stole, but he's not fighting actual crime. It's sort of like having, you know, super precognition to know when, where, how, who, you know, and by what means crimes are going to be committed, so that you can stop them well in advance.
Yes.
But through that, through having the flight ring and the suit, he later becomes a hero in his own right, because he's learning who he is through fighting crime. So that's, for me, is a really cool idea of what it means, you know, when the suit becomes the man, but the man later, and I think, you know, we'll talk about it later with Iron Man, but I think Iron Man is very similar in the evolution. I think we've gotten a lot more of Iron Man, you know, over time. But I think Booster Gold, as far as suited technological superheroes go, I think Booster Gold is among my favorites for that.
That is a very good point, because you, again, that was one that would easily slip. And, you know, also talking just in general about suiting up and the suit being the person, the Batman family in many ways.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because you... We've often talked about how it's not Bruce Wayne becoming Batman, it's Batman having to put up with being Bruce Wayne.
Right, right.
But in many ways, that suit has owned Bruce Wayne. It has consumed him to the point where the dichotomy is switched.
Right.
And now the alter ego becomes the ego. And vice versa. So you do have a situation there where the suit becomes the man in many ways.
And let's talk and a little bit about the ultimate super suit, which is, in my mind, the ultimate super suit is the Vision.
Ah.
Because his whole body is synthoid. But, you know, he has the memories and the... Whether you go by the comic book, which I prefer, or the movies, you know, his mind, his thought patterns, everything else is human. So, he's
basically become like this repository for a human mind.
Right, he's all... Like Red Tornado, for instance, falls into that category.
Or Robot Man.
Robot Man.
You actually have a physical brain removed.
Which is weird. Yeah. And if we're
the ultra humanite.
What was it?
When you find a big ass albino gorilla, what's your first instinct? Have your brain put inside its body.
Right.
Who wouldn't do that?
What about the worst? If we're considering this super suits, what about the worst super suit ever? Which was what was Mala's better half called?
Oh, the brain.
Yeah, just a brain in a jar.
Put himself inside it. Yeah, it's like a one of those Ozarka water dispensers.
it's like a water dispenser on a skateboard, and okay, that's it.
I will give you the worst suit.
Okay.
Ever.
Okay.
Is the giant ass plexiglass humanoid shape receptacle for failed chemical experiments that at some point the mixture thereof becomes self-aware?
Oh, man.
Yes. Read and weep. It's none other than Chemo.
Chemo? Oh.
I'm not sure how drastically Chemo's origins were altered in more recent years.
Right.
Because I know Chemo underwent some kind of cosmetic changes and managed to still remain. But somehow a bunch of disparate chemicals became self-aware in a Skynet kind of way, and then animated the human-shaped plexiglass receptacle that they were put in.
For
as
what
sort
reason?
Of a,
for what
well,
reason?
Apparently the scientist in question is this was his like It was like the big barrel of shame. Every time his experiments failed, they would be poured into this human, because he was failing humanity. It was just basically like this memento of failure. It was like a lamento, if you will.
Hashtag lamento. This episode's
lamento. Well, actually, Catherine had coined the term lamento as a reminder of something terrible or something you'd rather forget.
I like it.
And so, yeah, this was the ultimate lamento.
So in a weird Frankensteinian move, create something that looks human and fill it with your past mistakes.
Exactly, and somehow your mistakes become sentient and go on a rampage.
I will call you hubris. That's awful. Where do we fall?
Yeah, it's like this big bat of folly. I do want to talk
big
about
bat of folly.
The augmentary suit.
Okay.
Sometimes, you know, having a power isn't enough. One of the best examples of an augmentary suit that, if you have a rudimentary knowledge of physics, might seem quite feasible, but the more you put your brain to it, the less likely it seems, and that's Banshee's little winglets.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Somehow, by projecting his voice,
it's
echoing back across his body.
is it that what it is?
Or is he just kind of like, you know, getting a severe underbite, you know, affecting this really heavy overbite? So he can kind of go, Cletus.
I always thought it was the force of his voice would do it. Like, but that doesn't make any
sense. You just have to kind of purse your lips in weird ways to get the...
But that doesn't make any sense.
To go down across your underarms. You know?
Banshee makes no sense. Because it's either what you just described, right? It's
some weird vocal. It's like the, you know, lion face, lemon face.
Right. Or
you have to keep it up while vocalizing.
Or it's like a repulsor type technology that's just decimating everything under him while he flies, because he's using his voice, the force of his voice, to stay aloft. So, like, the Irish countryside is just rivulets of
furrows,
right?
Cut across the country.
Just the entire country is salted earth,
and crop circles were a result of him just testing the suit,
right? And how do you get the idea that you can
solve the mystery of the crop circle?
How do you? Okay, so let me. How big is your ego that you say I want to fly, right? Or you test your power at some point. So you're in your house or a barn, and you're like, ooh, and you go ooh, and then the wall blows out, but you get an inch off the ground, right? And you're like, oh, I can fly. Not, oh, I probably shouldn't do that since I'll destroy everything in the path
yes,
of my
exactly.
voice.
Well, you know, and what's even worse is the biggest culprit with the little winglets, as we're going to call them, is Black Bolt.
Right, he is.
I mean, if Black Bolt sneezes, the Himalayas are laid flat. You know?
What was funny is I was going to bring up Black Bolt because I just get this mental image of Black Bolt landing in front of Banshee about every 6 months and just flipping him off and then just flying off again. Like, right. You asshole. Like...
But, I mean, you know, this is a being that the mere utterance of a single syllable can level mountains and cities and,
right.
and crack the earth like an egg. And he's the same kind of ass who decides, I want to fly. And somehow between the X-Men, I guess, just waiting for Forge to be created.
Right.
And the, you know, the massive... piles of technology the Kree uncertainly left with their unwanted children, the Inhumans, nobody's come up with a freaking Legion flight ring?
Right. You got Stark over here making classic Corvettes fly around, but you can't come up with a personal flight device that everybody can just use.
Well, you know, speaking of bad suiting up, it was almost like a slap in the face on the part of the Shi'ar Empire that they're, you know, they're willing to accept that their Majestrix, that the leader of this entire empire, this multitude of planets is willing to eschew all culture and class and date a human.
Right.
But in a subtle little jab, they give Professor X a hover wheelchair.
Right.
They can build robot leg. They can give him, like, Forrest Gump technology magic legs.
But instead, they give him a hover wheelchair.
They are actuated by the human mind. You don't have to have, like, Professor X powers. Any human being could actuate these things with a mere thought. And they give him a freaking bulb bottom wheelchair thing. Just as a screw you, human.
I love it. I love
it. That is just the biggest slap in the face. It's so obvious. And Lalander is just so blind in love, she doesn't realize. And somehow it's slipping past Xavier. I don't know. He can't read their minds or something. But and, you know, meanwhile, all those featherheads are just laughing out their asses at him.
Oh, God. It's so good. It's hilarious. Oh.
I'm going to, you know, one of the things we do well in this show is to get you to think about comics.
That's the whole point.
Think
yeah.
about the comics you've read. I want you to think sometimes about comics in the strangest possible light.
Which we're hoping we can do. For instance, I've got one for you, and I don't know if this works, but I don't care. Arnim Zola. Can we talk about Arnim Zola for a second?
Yeah, talk about receptacles for the human mind.
Yeah, Arnim Zola, who, depending on what depiction you are a fan of, Hydra can do a great many things. And Arnim Zola, I don't believe, was military tech. I believe that because he did develop military tech, but all in all, he was a scientist. Couldn't get the head in the right part of the body.
That project there.
Right, could not get the head on the right part of the body. That's the thing, like, well, go ahead.
Yeah, what, I mean, what level of just, you know, narcissism is, you know, leads one to have their face be plastered across their chest. It would be like getting one of those shirts with a giant dog face on it or something like that, you know? Only it's your face.
Right.
And then to make it even worse, you don't have your head anymore. You have a one of the you have like one of those boxes for the cable back in the early days of cable.
Yeah, right.
You scrambler there.
You got a TiVo for a head.
That's right.
And your head is on your chest, and it's a big CRT tube because we couldn't imagine anything other than that in the 60s and the 70s.
Yeah, exactly. It was, they were so well ahead of themselves, yet so far behind.
And for most functional power suit, I almost said power bottom, power suit, I'm going to give that to MODOK because...
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah. Because
even MODOK is mocking Professor X,
right? with his little Mad Max child legs sticking off the front of that thing, just mocking Professor X, just a thumb in the proverbial eye of. Oh God! All right. Well, we need. Well, give me some final thoughts. We need to wrap this thing up. Okay. So,
well, I think you know the. One of the things we discovered in this was the nature of what defines a suit. Is it a suit of armor like that, which Wonder Woman just dons from time to time to augment her already incredible powers? Or is it a suit that, out of necessity, like unstable molecules or some sort of frictionless flash suit? In fact, we didn't even mention the Flash's miraculous cram into a ring suit.
Right.
I'll give you can don that thing in the blink of an eye, but there's some physics involved with how much even Superman can fold a piece of paper, which ironically is the same number of times a human can.
Right.
The idea of the suit, either giving you, augmenting your powers, or protecting your fragile self from the elements or from, you know, vicious punches to the midriff. And, you know, we talked about what was in the utility belt, but the utility belt itself becomes part of that suit idea.
Right.
The other aspect I think we really didn't talk about here, because we are talking about the toys, the tech, the you know, the things that take it a step beyond just some clothing in this particular case. But in so many ways, it is that suit that you get that same sort of iconography with the costume and choices. The
suits right. being worn.
And it was just very easy to aim for suits of armor and then discover there was so much more we had to talk about.
Always is. Always is.
Of the suit, and to discover some interesting facts about the X-Men in the process.
There you go. So why don't you go ahead and plug us up, and we'll get on out of here and join us again next week for another episode of Where
yes,
to Get
This Wonderful
Toys.
Yes, next week we're going military grade.
Okay.
We're going to talk about the heavy hitter, the real armors, the big ass stuff that just can that puts you on a level playing field with the, you know, the gods that walk the earth.
Right.
That take you many steps beyond like a guy with trick arrows or ass tail.
Ass tail. There you go. Ass tail.
So look for this and many other features on the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. You can write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. I think I said that wrong. The JediCoolUniverse.com, not at Yahoo.com. JediCoolUniverse.com, email jcumail@yahoo.com, Twitter @TheJediCoolU, and we have the Jedi Cool Universe YouTube channel with more to come. Also, look for myself and Eddie Medina with the Rancor Pit live on DeepElementAir.com. We are in the midst of the Force of July.
The Force of July.
Full month of various shows. We're normally every other week, and for an entire month, we're going weekly to bring you a lot more of your favorite Star Wars guys than you normally get. And then you can find out about conventions in the great state of Texas at Convention Awareness Project Texas, which is cap-tx.info, where you can get all kinds of poop on many an exciting convention of every fan interest.
Right.
All year long. Very soon we'll be starting to list the 2016 listings.
Ooh.
As well. Probably
nice.
Sometime in August. Had a lot of requests for 2016, and we're getting to the point where we're about ready to start making that happen. So
very cool.
Be sure and stay tuned for that. You can occasionally find any number of your favorite JCU personalities over at United States of Geekdom at UnitedStatesOfGeekdom.com. We haven't plugged them in a while.
Yeah.
I hadn't plugged old Rick in a while.
I
think with that, I may have exhausted my supply of things to plug.
There you go.
With the exception of, you can look for information on this on Cap, on the Convention Awareness Project site, Cap Texas. The Jedi Cole Universe Comic Toy and Collectible Swap Meet, which, as you listen to this, draws ever closer to its August 22nd date in Arlington, Texas at the Bob Duncan Center in Vandergrift Park, where we have a really remarkable variety of dealers all who joined the fun and will be part of this incredible show. So you get all kinds of toys, games, collectibles, comics, and just pretty much anything you might want to have to add to your collection. And we're also going to have a little bit of an artist alley as well with an invitational group. And ideally, we'll even have some folks out there representing for AllCon 2016 coming up in March of next year. And Lubbock Con
there you go.
In Lubbock, Texas coming up in February 2016.
There you go. We did. I was remiss. We did miss one that I wanted to talk about. And I don't know if it falls into the category that from last issue, but I really wanted to talk about the Ten-Eyed Man, and I don't know. I don't know. I think it fits. I think it fits.
And I think it does, because it's sort of a suiting up thing, because you have to have like the special gloves so you can see through your eyeballs.
That's right.
You see through your eyes. Yes, Cole.
You That's see through. Well, it, no, but you say it because he has eyeballs on all his fingers. It's different.
I was a dramatic pause there. You see through all your eyeballs. At the end of all ten of your fingers.
All right.
And
with that,
lumps and lines suiting up crazy quilt.
Oh, yes.
Have this little helmet.
Crazy quilt. Oh, God. Okay. All right. We're out of here. We'll talk to you next week. Bye, collect and enjoy your comics, guys. Go look up Marvel Wars, the original one from the 80s. It's fantastic. All right.